Morning, everyone, and welcome to what I think is going to be a new and exciting series. A series of Relate. I hope everyone is aware that we're starting today because there's a little bit of confusion, but anyway. In this series, we're going to have a look at what I've developed as a formula for all successful relationships. Just before I start, I thought I'd share something interesting with you. A few weeks ago, one of my weekly emails, which was called Safe Travels, for those of you who might remember it, I wrote a little thing that I thought we could learn from something that happened to me while I was traveling, when both on the way there and the way back, there was a mechanical problem on the plane, and the pilot said it was a maintenance signal problem, and I suggested some lessons that we could learn in life from that experience. So as one of the responses, I got a response of one of my relatives. I won't reveal who it was. And he wrote this following. He said, "I failed to see the Jewish content in this week's email. Are you a rabbi or a psychologist? Maybe you're a rabbi who's a frustrated psychologist. We all have dreams." So I just wanted to clarify, I'm definitely not a psychologist, and I try to be a rabbi. But this course that we're going to do now, and I think all the discussion we have on Thursday, is connected to a very firm belief that I have that the principles of Jewish wisdom and the teachings of the Talmud and the Torah are not just a manual for things that we have to do, for commandments that we have to observe, but they're meant to be a guide that provide us principles and values that make us grow as better human beings, that give us a moral compass to navigate life's complexities and enhance our relationships and give us solutions to life's dilemmas, etc. So it's in that context that we have these discussions, and including in that is this formula that I've taken a little bit from what we've done in previous years plus some new material and developed this formula of Relate, Respect, Empower, Love, Ask, Talk and Enjoy, which I believe contain and include the crucial components of every successful relationship. So today I want to begin first of all with a few words of introduction. We know that relationships, all relationships, are central to human existence. The first story of creation, which is the creation just after the creation of the human being, the first human being, Adam, we find the verse that tells us right after he was created, "Lo tov heyot ha'adam levado." It is not good for a man to be alone, or as sometimes translated, it's not good for a man to be lonely. In other words, God developed and created a foundation right at the beginning of creation that a human being must enter into a relationship. The human being's development is dependent on relationships. And therefore we are constantly in some form of relationship. We are always in relationships. Whether it's marriage, whether it's parenting, whether it's as teachers, as students, as children, as parents, friends, workplace, we constantly experience relationships. That is the fabric of the human existence. Now, I believe that the principles that govern all relationships are the same. They have a different application. We apply the various principles and values differently. But the fundamental critical ingredients that make every relationship successful are really the same. There's various components that must exist in every relationship for it to develop, maintain and be sustainable, and be nurtured. There's different doses of different ingredients that we apply to different relationships in different ways, but the principles are the same. That's the first concept. The second is that what people often don't realize is that any relationship needs work. Right? No relationship is automatic. Because of the definition of every relationship being two different people coming together, every relationship requires a lot of effort. No matter how good and how beautiful that relationship is, no matter how much bonding, how much love, how much friendship, how much closeness, how much connection might exist in that relationship, a relationship needs to be always reflected upon, We always need to put in effort. We always need to ensure that we are applying the right principles to ensure that the relationship is nurtured, that the relationship develops, and the relationship gets better and improved all the time. Because relationships are very much like life. They actually don't stand, they never stand still. That's a very important principle. Relationships never stand still. They either get better or they get worse. Very few relationships remain static, and they normally fizzle after a while. So every relationship, even, doesn't have to be only married. Every relationship can be developed. Every relationship must be developed and nurtured, but it requires effort, it requires work, and it requires applying the proper principles that we're going to discuss in this series. The other concept to consider is this. Unfortunately, what happens today, just following on from the previous thought, is that people respond very quickly and very carefully to crisis. Right? Often what happens is people start looking at relationships, or anything in life really, but particularly with relationships, people start looking at them when they're in trouble. Right? There's nowhere near enough done, nowhere near enough taught and discussed to ensure prevention of problems. So therefore, there's so much literature and there's so much stuff on resolution conflict, on abusive relationships. What do we do to protect the person? How do we, which is all very, very important and critical stuff. But we talk about sibling rivalry. What happens if people get into such fights? Decline in discipline when discipline in a classroom gets out of hand. Right? The purpose of this series is not so much to respond to crisis. Although there will always be some level of crisis in every relationship, meaning there will always be some level of tension and difficulty. But the main purpose, the main focus is really to look at prevention. What are those things that we need to do in every relationship to prevent as much as possible any type of tension, any type of decline, any type of conflict, any type of deterioration of the relationship. Now, that's the basis of the series that we're going to do. I want to just mention that probably, I don't think, because I want to do it properly, I don't think we're actually going to get through it this term, all the various concepts. It's probably going to take two sessions, two series. So part one, we'll do this term, part two, we'll do the next term. And also what I want to do is, in the spirit of acronyms, because this series is based on an acronym, I just thought of another one this morning, and that's, I want to just develop a sort of a method of how I want to do this, because I think it's very important. Often we talk about theory, but we don't put it into practice. So what I'd like to do is, as you see on your handout there, I'd like to look at a formula in this formula called DEAP. D-E-A-P. Which is, in every concept that we go through, and we're going to start with the first one, which is respect, to look at the definition. What is the definition of that principle? What is it? Obviously, to explain it and to expound upon it. But then also to look at application. How do we apply it? What is the practical application of all of these concepts? And then how do we actually practice it? How do we put it into practice? And how do we make sure that it works for us in our own relationships? Now, today we're looking at respect. All of these things we're not looking at as nouns. We're looking at them as verbs, right? Respect means, in order to have a successful relationship, we need to respect. In the concept of respect, today we're looking at it a bit more theoretical. We'll try and apply it a little bit on a practical level, and next week we'll do respect over today and next week, and next week we'll look at it much more practically as well. Now, a very important note with all of these things that we're going to cover, and that is every concept that is involved with relationships is always two ways, okay? So I suggest to you it's very important to develop a perspective of how we listen to these ideas. And again, some of these ideas we've covered before, we're putting them in some sort of structured process and with new material, but it's really important how we listen to them, because often, as human beings, especially when we listen to concepts to do with relationships, we all do this, and it's very instinctive. We say, oh, that's a really good concept. I think I need to share it with my partner. I need to share it with the person that I'm relating to, because he or she, or whatever relationship I'm in, needs to learn it. Now, that might be true because every relationship is two-way. So if I need to respect, I need to be respected. If I need to love, I need to be loved. If I need to empower, I need to be empowered. If I need to listen or talk, I need to be talked to and listened to. And that is critical and 100%. And often, we've had this question before with principles that we talk about in relationships. How do we make sure it's all very good that we listen to, but how do we make sure that the other person is doing the same? And there's answers to that, and there's discussions to be had surrounding that. But I think it's really crucial that step one of every process and every concept that we listen to in relationships, we apply to ourselves. It's what we need to do. And the truth is that the best way to get someone else to respond in kind is the more we do it ourselves, the more we motivate the other to do it to us. The more we respect others, the more we can expect them to respect us. The more we empower others, we can expect them to empower us. The more sensitive to what we are others, the more we can expect and motivate and ignite a sense of determination and desire on their part to be sensitive to us as well. So I suggest once again that we absorb these principles, and they are important principles, but first and foremost we try and apply them to ourselves. So let's try and begin the process. As I say, we're talking about respect. Now, as I said, we're not talking about only marriage, but marriage is always a good model to understand relationships. So we know in a Jewish marriage there's a document which is called the ketubah, right? Everyone is familiar with it. In the ketubah, it happens to be the legalities of the ketubah document is a declaration and a commitment that the husband makes to his wife. That's the way it's structured. Obviously, the commitments are two ways. The ketubah happens to be specific because it contains certain financial legal commitments, and in that context, in the ketubah context, it's more to do with the husband and his wife, and that's why the ketubah is the commitment that the husband makes. But at the beginning of the ketubah, there's a declaration of commitment of relationship. And in the ketubah it says, on such and such a day, in such and such a place, it's a very legal document, we are witness to the fact that so-and-so said, and we put the man's name with his father's name. That's the way in Jewish legalities we trace lineage to the father, Jewishness to the mother, etc. We say that so-and-so made a declaration to so-and-so, to the woman, to the bride, and he said to her, be my wife, and I will work on your behalf, I will honor you and sustain you. Right? That is a declaration. That's the beginning of the ketubah. And then it goes on to specify the details, including the price and specific financial arrangements, etc. But when looking at very, very first sentence, there's a very strange concept. We look at the first sentence, there's a declaration of relationship commitment. We're talking about marriage. I will work, I will honor you, I will sustain you, and doesn't say anything about love you. Now you'd imagine, it does in the mistranslation of the English, by the way. So if you ever went to a shul and you listen to the rabbi read the English, that's actually quite remote from the actual ketubah. I'm not quite sure why they translated it that the way.
It sounds good.
Maybe it sounds better, but right. But it's really very little to do actually to what the ketubah says. It says, I will love you and she will love him, etc. But in the actual original ketubah, which is written, by the way, in the Aramaic language, it says nothing about love. It talks about honoring the person, working for the person, sustaining the person, etc. And the answer is, obviously, marriage, and so too with every relationship in different ways, but marriage is about love, obviously. Love is the glue of all relationships. Connection, bonding, or whatever level, you know, in whichever context. But there's a very specific reason why the ketubah does not have the word love. And the answer is as follows. Let's go step by step. Every human being is born with a tremendous dose of self-centeredness. Right? Little children are self-centered. Now there's an important reason for that. There's a reason why people are born that way. There's a reason why God designed creation that children should be extremely self-absorbed and self-centered. And the reason is because the first stage of human development is that people need to discover themselves. they need to discover who they are. Every person is an individual, every person is unique, and therefore every person needs a time in their life where they discover who they are, they develop their identity. Right? And then as a person gets older, they start to enter into relationships, into all different types of relationships, sibling relationships, friend relationships, teacher-parent relationships, and ultimately, a strong relationship of marriage, hopefully. A person grows up and enters relationships because what happens is a person learns to leave their self-centeredness. We learn to leave ourselves and to consider and relate other people. Okay? In other words, when we've developed our own identity, hopefully in a healthy way, when we've discovered who we are, then we need to learn the ability of leaving who we are and broadening ourselves with an amazing opportunity called relationships, right? In other words, we learn then, once we've solidified who we are, we then learn how to relate and connect and bond with people who think differently than we do, who feel differently, who see the world completely differently, who have different skills or different talents. It is true that for a relationship to work, there must be common goals. There must be common values. There must be compatibility. That's true. But that's not the depth of relationships. Right? That's the connection. There has to be a connection. But that's not the real depth of why relationships are such a beautiful thing. Relationships actually, and the opportunity of relationship, is actually more to do with the difference between us than it is with what's common between us. Now, of course, you don't automatically draw yourself to someone that's different, right? You don't look for someone who you can't stand. You know, you don't look for the person that annoys you the most and say, oh, that's the person I want to marry, right? Obviously not. You look for someone who you can share things with, you can connect with, you can bond with. But that bonding experience, that connection experience, will actually develop and be enhanced and be nurtured specifically through what is different between you. What you learn from each other in every relationship. What you learn to learn from what you don't have. So that you broaden your identity, you broaden your reality, you take on board new things, new perspectives, new ideas, new experiences. You become a better person by valuing the difference. Okay? So therefore, the process of life is that you're born not with a natural ability to have a relationship, specifically, because you're born inward, you're born self-centered in order to discover yourself and discover who you are and develop your own identity. And then you're given the opportunity to go beyond yourself and relate to someone else. But here comes the problem. Because as people enter into relationships, most relationships, and as I said, the glue of relationships is connecting to the other person. Connection comes from loving the other person. The bonding of relationships, obviously, is through the love, and we'll talk about that in great detail when we talk about that, the L of relate, which is love. But love, and by the way, when I talk about love, I'm talking about all different types of love. There is an element of love that must exist in every relationship. In marriage, it's one type of love. In siblings and parents and children, it's a different type of love. In friends, it's a bonding. With students, with everything, there must be always some bonding glue that keeps the relationship together. So love is a very strange emotion. Why? You see, as critical as love is to every relationship, the problem with love is it's actually an egocentric emotion. Think about this for a second. For me to love something, love is an emotion that I feel connected. It's an I emotion. I love. Right? Now, the truth is that's very important. Because you don't want to be loved by nobody. Right? You want to be loved by someone. You don't want to be on the receiving end of love where there isn't the presence of someone that loves you. So therefore, love is an emotion where you have to be extremely present. Where you have to be extremely involved. Where the you has to express itself in a very strong way. You, the person that loves. You show love. You express love. But because love is so connected with the I love, the me, it is so easy to be derailed into a very strong self-absorbed and self-centered process. And that's why, unfortunately today, so many relationships deteriorate and become dysfunctional. Why? Because so many relationships where when you look at the beginning of the relationships, you see love, you see depth of love, or it appears to be that way. You see romance, you see everyone's just over the moon. And then 3 years later, or many years later, it's all over, or it's totally dysfunctional, or it's just gone cold. Or why? Because many of those relationships begin and are based on love. And the relationship cannot be based on love. Because when a relationship is based on love, when its beginning, its origin is love, it can very easily become completely derailed because it's very self-centered. It's very much like my famous story that I always tell, and I'm sure most of you have heard this from me already, about the I love fish relationship, right? It's the Hasidic Rebbe of Kotsk, famous Rabbi of Kotsk, who once passed by a restaurant and saw one of his disciples eating fish. So he said to him, "My son, why are you eating fish?" So the guy said, "Because I love fish." So he said, "If you love fish, why are you eating the fish?" Right? And that's such a deep story, because so often love is about what I love, and therefore I consume it, I use it, because it's confused with romance and pleasure. So therefore it is good as long as it is feeding my ego. It's good as long as it's working for me. It's good as long as it's compatible with my view and my perspective and my ideals and my ways of looking at things. Right? And today, unfortunately, we live in a world where so many relationships on all levels are I love fish relationships. That's what they are. Because they're not really based on true love, because we'll see that true love is not self-centered if we do it properly. If there's a prerequisite to love, which is respect, which we're going to talk about in a second. But very often relationships are apparently based on love, but they're confused with romance, with pleasure, with very self-centered emotions, which are not really true love. Now, as I said before, connection and bonding is the goal of relationships. But in order to make sure that love, that connection, where each party of the relationship, each person in the relationship is supporting the other, is enhancing the other, is bringing out the best in the other, is learning from the other, is truly bonding with the other, in order to make sure that happens, the first step of every relationship cannot be love. The first step of every relationship has to be respect. And that's why the Ketubah does not mention love. Because the Ketubah is a statement of real commitment to relationship. And therefore it requires the groom, and same thing really with the bride, but in the Ketubah concept it's the groom, to make a statement and to commit himself in a document signed by witnesses that he will be a good husband. And be a good husband means I will respect you, I will honor you, it says, which is respect. If that respect is there, if it's truly present, if it's really strong, then the love will develop from that. Of course, marriage is about love. But it would only work, and a love will only be true, if the relationship can be based on a ketubah commitment, which is, I will respect you. It's interesting that at a chuppah, if we just use this example, right? After the ceremony is over, which the ceremony is a spiritual and halachic and legal process where two people become legally married, under which the ketubah is actually read out, We know that after the chuppah, the bride and groom go into a room to be secluded for a few minutes. It's called the yichud, right? Where they become one. Now, the yichud, it's true, that's an expression of love. That's an expression of bonding, of connection. But that comes after the ketubah. First of all, there has to be a ketubah where there's a commitment, there's a statement of respect. If that respect is strong, then you can proceed to the next stage. And that's why there's no love in the ketubah, it's only about respect, because that's step one to every relationship. So what's the definition of respect? Let's talk about definition. What does respect actually mean? Because we'll probably talk about this a bit more next week, but respect has many different applications. Because in the Torah, for example, we find all different types of respect, and sometimes the word respect is often misunderstood, because sometimes people always understand respect to be a hierarchical thing, where you respect a superior. Right? Now, there is some forms of respect in the context of some relationships, but that's not the definition of respect. That's an outcome of particular roles in particular relationships, as we'll soon see. The definition of respect is much more fundamental than that. Okay. I think there's a few definitions of respect, but they all come down to one thing. The definitions of respect is like this. First of all, I think the first definition of respect is that I value the other person as an individual outside of myself. Okay? And therefore I'm committed to preserving that individual identity and not smothering it. Not consuming it. So you can see already how this works, because sometimes that's what love does. When it destroys, that's when sometimes when love destroys a relationship, where sometimes love is so strong that it consumes the other rather than enhances the other. Right, and we'll develop this as we go along. So respect is, I value the other person as an individual outside of myself, and I pledge and I commit to doing whatever I can to preserve that individuality. And therefore we come to the other definitions, like I acknowledge and value that the other person has needs that are different to mine, to which I will respond. I acknowledge and value that the other person has perspectives, opinions, ideas that are different to mine, to which I will appropriately respond. Or I acknowledge and value that the other person has a role, okay, very important. Often in relationships, different people have different roles. Has a role that's different to mine, to which I will respond in the appropriate way. Is that clear? In other words, respect is, before we can get to connection, you actually have to acknowledge that the person is not me. That the relationship is not about taking two different entities and melding them into one. That's not what a relationship is. A relationship is when two individual entities come together and become one while remaining two separate entities. That's the depth of a relationship. Not that you create some sort of third entity where everyone's unique identity disappears and dissipates. That's not what a relationship is. A relationship is where there's a preservation of everyone's unique identity, and it's the unique identity of that person that continues to fuel and to nurture and to develop and to contribute to the relationship. So therefore, before I can love someone, which is all about connection and bonding, I actually need to acknowledge that they will remain not me. That they will continue to remain a unique, special, individual identity. I've said this before, but that's why we learn this beautiful lesson from a Torah scroll. Right? A Torah scroll has many, many letters, and there are many, many laws that govern the writing of a Torah scroll. Now, a Torah scroll is almost like a relationship. It's like a community, right? They all have to be there. If you read a Torah scroll, there's thousands of letters, right? If you read a Torah scroll and there's one letter missing, the whole Torah scroll is invalid. You've got to put it back and take another one, fix it after Shabbos. So all the Torah, because all the letters in the Torah scroll become like one identity. It's like one, they create one Torah. Yet, there's a fascinating law in a Torah scroll that every letter must stand alone. If there's one thin stroke of ink that joins one letter with another, the entire Torah scroll is invalid and has to be fixed again after Shabbos. Why? Because for a Torah scroll to be kosher, every letter must remain separate, must maintain its individuality. Yes, it's part of a whole. This is a good lesson for communities also. Community is the same thing. You have a community, a unit, a club, a union, whatever. People meld and they come together and they become a unit. But it only works if no one loses their individuality, if everyone remains a separate letter. So therefore, every relationship, therefore, the first step of every relationship is respect. Respect means that I commit to preserve your unique individuality and understand that you are different than me. And has a different role. Which, by the way, because of the different roles, and we'll develop this more next week, because of the different roles, that's why we apply respect in every relationship in a different way. For example, the way a child has to respect a parent is very different than the way a spouse respects each other. Because in the Torah, we find two types of respects. There's what I call vertical respect and horizontal respect. Horizontal respect are respect between equals, respect between friends, respect between spouses. One isn't higher than the other, they're just equal, but there's respect. It's based on the same principle. It's a respect of different roles, respect of different ideas and opinions and feelings and perspectives. And then there's vertical respect. Vertical respect works two ways. There's hierarchical respect. It thrives very strong on respect that a child has to have for a parent. It's based on the same idea because a child recognizes that a parent is not his friend. A parent has the unique role. A parent recognizes, it's also vertical respect, that the child is unique, and therefore you have to respect the child as well. So a parent has to respect the child has to respect the parent. But because the parent and child's roles are very different, the way that respect is applied is very different. So the rules of the respect might be different. The way we implement those rules of respect might be different. But the fundamentals of the respect are the same. When the first relationship took place in the Torah, and God created Eve, He created the first woman, in order that there should be a relationship between man and woman, that verse I quoted before where God says, it's not good for man to be lonely or man to be alone, I will make him, the Hebrew word is Ezer Kenegdo. Ezer Kenegdo means a help, a support. Kenegdo means opposite him. The word in Hebrew for neged actually is a term of opposition. Neged, right? In modern Hebrew, if you support something, you ba'ad. If you oppose something, you're neged. Right? So sometimes people ask, are you ba'ad or neged? Right? Do you support or are you against? The woman is called Ezer Kenegedor. Now, there's different interpretations of this. There's one Talmudic interpretation where God is telling us that relationships are going to be one or the other. It's either going to be a support or it's going to be an opposition. It depends what you do with it. Right? But there's another deeper explanation, that is that when can there be Ezer? When can there be support of each other? When can there be connection? When you appreciate the Negedor. You appreciate that actually you're opposite. You appreciate that you're different, that there's a neged concept. There's a neged element in every relationship. You want that word again? Ezer. Yeah. And negedo. Right? Let's just develop this a little bit. this whole idea. We find that in the Talmud, there's a instruction given to husbands and to wives and how relationships should take place. And the way that the Talmud instructs husbands to relate to their wives is then quoted by Maimonides. the Rambam. But if you analyze it properly, you see that there's a certain instruction given by the Talmud, and it's changed by the Rambam. And one needs to understand why. So let's have a look at it. The Talmud says, and I'm going to quote for you. Again, there's instructions given to husbands, to wives, but this is what I'm quoting is the one that deals with a husband. Talmud says a husband should love his wife as himself, and should respect her even more than himself. That's what the Talmud says. Okay, he should love his wife as himself and respect her even more than himself. Maimonides, the Rambam, when he quotes this instruction from the Talmud, he changes the order. He says, a husband should respect his wife even more than himself and should love her as himself. Alright? He changes it around. Now, how can you do that? How can the Rambam play with the Talmud like that? The Maimonides was supposed to be a codifier. We're supposed to just extract instructions from the Talmud and put them in a structured way and tell us what the Talmud wants us to do. So why does he change it around?
He was married.
So are the people in the Talmud. He changes it around because in every relationship, in every experience in life, it works like this. There's a goal and then there's a strategy. And the strategy sometimes works different to the goal. What do I mean? Sometimes you state the ultimate goal of something, but then when you translate it into strategy and application of how you get there, you say that there are steps need to be taken before you actually get there. So the way it works is the Talmud talks about the goal of marriage. The goal of marriage is love. The goal of marriage is connection. The goal of every relationship is connection. The goal of every relationship is coming together. That's the idea. It's called relationship. It's to relate to someone else. Right? Respect is not an expression of connection, by the way. In the way we express our emotions, respect is actually backing off. Respect means I respect your difference. Respect actually creates borders, really. Respect says there's certain walls around, there's areas of privacy, there's things I need to respect. You know, when you respect someone's privacy, for example, what does that mean? It means I don't intrude, I don't connect, I stay away, because I respect that there's certain areas that I can't come into. Right? It's different to love. So the Talmud, when it wants to talk about marriage, and it wants to talk about how every marriage needs love and respect, the Talmud is a theoretical book, so therefore what the Talmud does is, it tells us what the goal of every relationship is, and in that context it tells us what the goal of marriage is, and the goal of marriage is love, is connection. Maimonides is a book of law. Maimonides is a manual of instruction. It's a manual of strategy. Maimonides comes and says, you want to know how to achieve this? You want to know how to do this? You've got to reverse the order. You've got to start with the ketubah. You want to know how to do this? You've got to reverse the order. And remember that step one, you want to land up connecting, you want to land up really being close, start with the opposite, start with respect. Start with emphasizing the difference. Start with respecting the difference. Start with acknowledgement of the individual identity. It's a different expression than connection, but it's step one. And that's why Maimonides turns it around. We find this concept, by the way, in an idea which we've discussed many times about the emotions of the human being. Right, we know there are seven emotions that govern the human being, primarily driven by the first two. No, what are they? Chesed and Gevurah, right? We've talked about Chesed and Gevurah many times. So Chesed and Gevurah, Chesed is the origin of love, Gevurah is the origin of respect. Because Chesed, right, the emotions of a person are driven primarily by two drivers. Chesed is the power to connect, to be flexible, to meld with other people, to tolerate other people, to love other people, to connect other people, to be open to other ideas. It's moving, it's broadening myself to connect to the outside world. Gevurah, which can be a negative thing, but I'm talking about positive gevurah, Right? Gevurah is about inward. It's about backing off. It's about moving away. That's why fear comes from Gevurah. Right? Now, when we talk about the emotions of human being, the first one is chesed. Why? Because the goal is chesed. The goal is not gevurah. The goal is connection. The goal is love. Right? But in practice, you'll have gevurah first. And I'll tell you where that's reflected. The Talmud says, when you relate to children, for example, right? When a teacher relates to children, so it says there's the left hand and the right hand. The left hand has to push away, it says, right? Meaning, has to create borders. That you're not my buddy, there's respect, and respect in the context of teacher-student relationship. But, as in every relationship, it needs closeness. And it's, the Talmud says the right hand must bring close. By the way, this is often a problem with relationships. There's a dose of one without the other. See, marriage often has love without respect. Teacher-student relationships often don't work because the teacher demands respect without love. Right? So it's got to be both, right? And the Talmud says, in fact, the love's got to be more than respect, even with teacher-student relationships. And that's why, or with parent-children relationships, for sure. Right? Because that's what's going to... It's teacher-students, it's a relationship. It's not just imparting knowledge, it's a relationship. And therefore, there's got to be connection. And therefore, the right hand is always considered stronger than the left, and love comes from the right hand. And therefore, the love's got to be stronger than the respect, or the hierarchical respect that is present in teacher-student relationships. Yet, although the goal is the connection, and the connection has to be stronger, and the love has to be stronger, but the Talmud says, in practice, it should always be the left comes before the right. Because you've got to create borders. You've got to know who's the teacher and who's the student. What are the rules of the game here? We can't start the teacher-student relationships unless we first have that respect. In practice, the ketubah comes before the chuppah, or before the yichud. Because respect must come first. So yes, when we talk about the emotions, we talk about chesed and gevurah. When the Talmud talks about the goals of relationship, it talks about love before respect. But in practice, respect must be the first foundation. So I'm just thinking very briefly, just a beautiful thought with that. Our patriarchs, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, right, also correspond to the various emotions. So we know that Abraham symbolizes chesed, love. Yitzchak symbolizes gevurah. Now again, Abraham was born before Isaac because the goal is love. But it's interesting that on Shabbat, the meals of Shabbat, you know, there are actually three meals. There's a Friday night meal, there's a Shabbos morning meal, and then there's a Shabbos afternoon meal. And that also corresponds to the three patriarchs of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But if you look in the works of Kabbalah, you'll see, and I'm doing this very briefly, it needs a lot more explanation, but you'll see actually that the Friday night meal is not Abraham, the Friday night meal is Yitzchak. The Friday night meal is the meal of Isaac, and the Shabbos morning meal is the meal of Abraham. For the same reason, because although the goal is Abraham, the goal is love, in practice, when you start an experience, when you start any experience, even if it's a relationship with the day of Shabbat, for example, you've got to start with Yitzchak, you've got to start with respect first. And respect always comes before. So in practice, Yitzchak comes before Abraham. Yaakov is Tiferet. That's the harmony of both. When both come together, that's like the ultimate. So let's just end off by trying to put this a little bit into some level of application. And I said next week we're going to develop it more and talk more about specifics. What does it mean? So we know the definition. What does it actually mean in practice? What do you do? How do you apply this, right? So let me share with you just some ideas of what the application of respect actually means. The application of respect means you can have respect, but you have to apply respect, right? And apply respect means, for example, to show a genuine interest in what the other person is interested in, even though it doesn't interest you. Right? If you really have a relationship, if it's self-centered, if it's just about love and romance, and of course, if it doesn't interest me, then why should I engage in it? Right? This could be hard. In a marriage, this could be very difficult. Right? But it needs a lot of work. In both ways, by the way. Right? Because if you really respect the other person's uniqueness and individuality, then what is important to you needs to become on some level at least important to me. And if you're interested in something and your individuality really means something to me, then it means I have to somehow become interested in it on some level. Right? Respect, applying respect also means to learn how not to judge. That's an application of respect. Because you judge someone because you project your perspective. Right? Now, very, very often we know what other people do or what other people experience and how other people act has nothing to do with right or wrong. Sometimes it does, but very often it's got nothing to do with right or wrong. It has to do with how we perceive the world. But you don't perceive the world that way, so why am I judging you? The way you perceive the world, you have a different conclusion, and therefore you act differently. Now, I might need to, in different relationships, there might still be a responsibility. If I have a child, I have a responsibility to correct their behavior and train them in a certain way, etc. But even then, I have to do it specific to the way they need to develop. As we know in education, we say, educate each child according to their way, right? Because it has to be individuality. Respect means that when there's a conflict, if a person has genuine respect, if we work on developing respect, it's much easier to take care of the problem of anger. Because if I truly respect someone, I don't instinctively respect with anger. I try to understand where they're coming from. I might still disagree. That's fine. Respect, by the way, doesn't mean disagreeing. Agreeing. Because you have your individuality, I have my individuality. But at least it allows me to understand where the person is coming from. Respect means to actually genuinely try to learn from the other person. What can I learn from that person that I don't have? Respect means never to put someone else down. That's the hard one. Respect leads to openness and honesty. Right? So if I respect you, I would never be untruthful. Respect means being sensitive to another person's feelings, being sensitive to the way the other person thinks, and not saying things that maybe to me wouldn't be a problem, but to them it might be a problem. Right? Respect means never to impose things on other people, to understand that other people have the right sometimes to say no. And respect, of course, means the willingness to compromise and to give up sometimes. Because I give up for someone else because I respect their need and their interests and where they're coming from. And of course, ultimately, respect means that I'm able to make the other person really feel valued and feel safe. And let's just mention just a few things. So how do we develop this? I mean, that's what respect is, and that's how we apply respect. But what's the practice part of it? What's the P? How do we practice this? How do we actually develop this, right? Because you don't have a person doesn't naturally have respect. Let's remember what we began with. People are not born with respect. People are born egocentric. People are born self-absorbed. That's where children develop. So how do we actually suddenly develop this ability to respect others and to respect difference and to value individuality? So first of all, we need to test our own respect. Do we really respect others? And one of the ways to test it, there's many ways, but one of the ways to test it is how do we actually treat people that are either subordinate to us or have no value or importance to us? Okay? How do you treat the garbage collector when you see him? As we said before, how do you treat the telemarketer on the phone, even though they're annoying you, right? They're a person. They deserve respect. They don't deserve to drive me crazy 5 days a week, but I can get rid of that a different way, but they still deserve some level of respect, right? So a way to test our respect is how do we treat people, actually, that we don't have any love for, we don't have any connection for? Can we still respect them, right? I'd also like to suggest that we begin the process of developing respect. So here's an activity, for example. Pick any relationship that you have and write down on a piece of paper. It's an interesting exercise. Write down on a piece of paper. Now, the first part's easy, the second part's hard. Write down on a piece of paper two or three things that person is very different from you. That's the easy part. But write down on a piece of paper what you can learn from those differences that you could not learn from being who you are. In other words, what can you gain from those differences? You understand? Because respect in a relationship must mean that I respect that person's difference, and that difference is actually going to enhance the relationship. So therefore, you write down and identify some of the differences that exist in that person that is different to me, and how I'm going to learn from that. And then reflect, maybe take a few minutes just to reflect, when was the last time that we actually related in a way where I showed interest in something that's not my interest? And if we haven't done that for a while, we need to do that. That might be with children, might be with a spouse, might be with a friend. When was the last time I actually, is this a one-way relationship, or am I actually trying genuinely to show interest in areas where it's not my interest? Right? These are just some of the examples I actually to start putting this into practice. Now, as I said, next week, we're going to develop this much more specifically, just develop the concept of respect much more in a broader way, and also deal with some of the specifics in a much greater and more detailed way. Have a great week.